This is Vanda Mikowatska Solomon. I am speaking in reference to an interview that I did with Professor Anna Maria Orla-Bukowska. I attended the 22nd celebration of the Polish Jewish Cultural Festival in Kozienice, the district in Krakow, this summer, June 2012, at which time I also interviewed Professor Anna Maria Orla-Bukowska. Anna Maria is a member of the faculty at the Institute of Sociology Anthropology at the Jagiellonian University. I first met her while attending a Kosciuszko Foundation Jagiellonian University summer school program on Polish Jewish history. Anna Maria was born in America and then studied in Krakow at the university, teaching there for over 20 years. Her specialty is Polish Jewish matters. This year, she completed a three-year evaluation of the Jewish Cultural Festival, working for the Jagiellonian University. The results of this evaluation will be used in the future by festival planners. 7 years ago, with Professor Robert Cherry, Anna Maria Orla-Bukowska wrote the book Rethinking Poles and Jews, Troubled Past, Brighter Future. The book has been a huge success and is now translated into Polish. We will begin listening to Professor Anna Maria. Our conversation took place at the Hotel Sanacki in Krakow. I will introduce Professor Anna Maria Orla-Bukowska, who is here today in Krakow, having just left her classroom, and we are meeting across the way from the Jagiellonian University's Department of Sociology, the Sanacki Hotel. And I must say, I haven't seen the professor for a period of time. I thoroughly enjoyed taking her summer class sponsored by the Jagiellonian University and the Kosciuszko Foundation a few years ago, and very pleased to attend the book event a few years past for the professor's book, Rethinking Poles and Jews, Troubled Past, Brighter Future. I hope to learn more about this book, which was edited with Robert Cherry, about the outcome of this very well received book. But let us begin. I want to ask how you personally, as a young academic, became interested and involved in Polish Jewish history.
I was born and raised in the United States. And so I had the American perspective as well as the Polish perspective on World War II. What was missing for about two generations was the Jewish perspective on World War II. And this started to emerge, of course, after the Holocaust miniseries that NBC did in 1978. After that, average Joe Smith on the street knows the word Holocaust, is talking about the Holocaust, is exploring this area. Unfortunately, in the United States also, basically since the end of the 19th century and the beginning of the 20th century, when the first waves of immigrants from Central Eastern Europe, from the empires, from the Prussian, Russian, and Austro-Hungarian empires, started to land on America's shores, they did tend to be these persons mostly illiterate peasants, and as a result, one of the stereotypes that really got embedded in American society was that Polish Americans were dumb. This whole stereotype also supplanted any stereotype that could have been left over from the times when Kościuszko and Pułaski, very educated men, when they fought in the American Revolutionary War, you would think that a Polish-American stereotype in America would be extremely positive. But this wave of immigrants, poor, impoverished, and illiterate, most of them, it was true, at the end of the 19th, beginning of the 20th century, that stereotype is the one that got the most deeply held and most deeply engraved in American societies, in the mind's eye of the typical American. And so, at the beginning of the 1980s, there was this conflation of the two stereotypes. One was the dumb Polak, and the other one was that since I know now about the Holocaust, and I know that Auschwitz is located on today's Polish ground, then it must have been the Poles who did it. And so this intertwining of different myths about the Poles led to even more negative opinion about the Poles. And I felt damn proud to be Polish American, had always felt that way. I, quite by historical coincidence, happened to be in Gdańsk in the first week of the Solidarity Strikes, and we were feeding my cousin's brother-in-law through the shipyard gates with Lech Wałęsa's voice coming over the megaphones. I saw Poland suffering under martial law because I took a vacation to Poland in the summer of 1983. And I started studying here in 1985. I saw the last years of the communist regime, and I saw the Polish people overthrow peacefully their communist-installed government and do the hard work of changing the economy overnight into capitalism, working out, hammering out democracy again, trying to restore what had been in place before the Second World War, and rethinking their identity, suddenly coming up in the end of the 20th century, beginning of the 21st century, and having to rework your identity yet again in history. And so seeing that kind of Poland, it was really frustrating for me to be, whenever I was in the United States or heard American opinions. Of course, now with the internet, you can see comments whenever a book comes out or a film comes out, etc. Dr. Schindler's List, for instance, at the beginning of the 90s, I heard a lot of opinions, well, see, Schindler was a good German, but those Poles, they were bad. And suddenly, the Germans got cleansed, and the Poles got even seen as even worse. So when I first came here in 1985, I was already interested in Polish-Christian, Polish-Jewish relations before the war and during the war, and I started to explore it. To make a very long, detailed story very short, I'll just say that basically from the moment that I arrived here, ostensibly to stay for 2 years, and I've been here since 1985, so 27 years. From the moment I arrived, every time I mentioned that I was interested in Polish-Christian, Polish-Jewish things, somebody gave me something, a book to read, legal or illegal under communism. Somebody told me about a lecture. Somebody told me about a film that would be shown in the cinema. And somebody would ask me to, would invite me to their home for the weekend because you have to talk to my uncle who had a Polish-Jewish neighbor and they always came to their horses together. You have to talk to my my great aunt because she and her family had Jews during the war. It was a snowball. I never met someone who said, what are you doing this for? There's nothing to talk about. It was quite the opposite. Yes. And so, and it's never stopped. Every time something new comes up, I go, more reason to stay here.
And you offer so much to your students. Could you comment on how the students and your classes have changed over the years? Is the program highly academic, or is it unique for some reason?
Well, I teach various subjects because I am a social anthropologist who is in a sociology department. And I do have classes that are on the anthropology of cultural pluralism. I also teach a class about contemporary racism and nationalism. I also do classes that are investigating more Polish-Christian, Polish-Jewish issues. And I also teach a class about the Shoah. So two things with regards to what I've seen over this, the last 16 years since I started teaching here.
And that's in specific reference to
the
summer?
Yeah, University and the SNOP. Not just the summer program, but in general.
For how long has the summer program gone on?
Oh, I think over 50 years.
It has been.
Yeah.
And that is in conjunction with the university and the Christian.
Yes.
How is that program different, or how has it changed?
Well, during the academic year, we have in classes, mostly Polish students in the classes where I teach in Polish. However, very often I will have one or two students who are from different countries, but who have learned Polish, either because they are mixed Polish heritage, or simply because they are interested in Poland, and they appear in the classes. This brings a new dynamic, so this mixing of perspectives is very good. Some of my classes I teach in English. There I tend to have more exchange students from different countries, and along with them some Polish students. This mixture of perspectives is something that I fully utilize in my classes. I ask my students, well, what were you taught in school? What were you taught in school in your country? We do comparisons, etc. This tends to sort of broaden perspectives of all of the students because they see that their truth that they were given when they were in school is not the only truth, right? It's also a similar case with the summer school. The summer school, however, is also slightly different because, as you know, it's all ages. The youngest members in the classroom are about 18, 19 years old, they're freshmen in universities. Others are retired and now have time to sit in on lectures that they couldn't do before. And also in our classes, generally there tend to be, I would say, probably one third of the makeup of the classes is American. Mm-hmm. The rest are from other European countries, very often also from Asian countries like China, Japan, Singapore, etc. So we do have...
Using the class as a guide, would you say that there is the same interest in Polish Jewish matters as they were 10 years, or even more so? I was surprised at the time I took the class that so many colleges and universities and states were represented that had a Holocaust programs. There's still a keen interest in this topic.
Very much so, very much so. I mean, in the United States, there's literally, you could count on the fingers of less than one hand, the number of universities and colleges in the United States who offer a Holocaust and or genocide degree specialization or program, and there is only one university, Clark University, which offers a doctorate in this field. Here in Poland, we have been offering MAs with this kind of specialization Only the last few years, but not because we didn't want to do this, but because here the bureaucracy of introducing a new specialization takes a long time, and also because here in Poland there was a feeling that this topic is something that needs to be approached more holistically. And so students who are interested in this tend to take classes within, for instance, an interdepartmental study where they take classes, for instance, in Polish literature that deals with the Holocaust, Polish history that deals with the Holocaust, sociological, anthropological classes that deal with the Holocaust. We now also, since the year 2000, have a center on Holocaust research that started as a Holocaust research center. It has since evolved into now a degree program, MA and PhD. Our Jewish studies department also, 1985, when I first arrived here, it started as a research center at the university. Now, today, it is a full-blown-out institute offering MAs and PhDs.
Interesting.
And the interest is definitely not dying. It seemed at the beginning in 1985, when the Jagiellonian University was the first university in Poland to have a Jewish studies department, a Jewish studies center, research center, that we were going to be the only one for a long, long time to come. And yet, in very short time, Warsaw started to spin off such a center. A university in Lublin also did, as a public university in Lublin, in Gdansk, in Wrocław, people started to be interested. It really has spread. And it's interesting that students, again, for me, counting in Poland, only the students who are registered in something that is called a Jewish Studies Department or a Holocaust Studies Department would be unfair to, and would certainly not be representative of the what is actually the full phenomenon. The full case is that there are students in almost every department who are interested in these subjects and who look for, seek out elective courses. And this is another thing. It's one thing if a student is taking a course because they have to, another if it is an elective.
Yes?
Like the summer school also. The summer school is an elective course. And of course, the world financial crisis did put a dent in the student population in the summer school, you can imagine, right? That this was something that was going to make it a little bit difficult for people to come to fly in the summer when the prices of flights are the most expensive, etc. That said, I've never had trouble filling my class to get at least the minimum. Even in times of financial crisis, I always have extra students. The other thing is, you asked about other changes, and one of the changes that I see at the university, as well as in the summer school, is the students who are Polish or Polish plus. Students who are Polish German, Polish Austrian, yes. Polish French, Polish English, Polish Australian, Polish Polish American, Canadian, Mexican, Argentinian. These students, some of them appear during the school year. They come here for a full semester. While they are in their colleges or universities back home, they get permission to do a semester abroad, and they are doing two things at once. They could go on an exchange program anywhere, but they come to Poland because they know, they are aware of their Polish heritage, and they are proud enough of it that they want to delve deeper into it, really come to know it better. And some people can only afford to do a six-week course during the summer, but others really have the time, the energy, and the wherewithal to do this longer. They come here for a semester or for the whole academic year.
Yes.
it's really interesting for me to see these students. On the one hand, I can say that they are doing what I did in 1985 when I first came here, in a sense. But they are of a different generation. For many of them, their parents emigrated in the 1980s, 1981 under Solidarity, 81, 82, 83 under martial law. So their history and their starting point is completely different. And some of them are Polish Jewish American, some of them are Polish Catholic American. This is also something that we have to keep in mind, that when we say Polish American, we shouldn't assume that they are all Polish Roman Catholics.
Yes, yes.
And there's also the fact that Polish Jewish Americans are sitting in the same classroom as Polish Catholic Americans, and they choose to take a class on the Holocaust during the school year, or they come for the summer school course, that they want to do this very difficult subject, because I don't care what nationality you are, this is a difficult subject, but it's going to be especially difficult because it's so much more complex for someone who is Polish Jewish, Polish Catholic, and something else, right? Having grown up in some other system, in some other society, in some other educational program, they have to now, some of them are young people, 19, 20 years old, and they have to try to make some sense of everything that they've been told, what they've been told at home by their family, from their parents' generation, but also their grandparents' generation, what they heard from their family in Poland when they come here, what they heard in school in Australia, in Canada, in France, and what they themselves, what books they picked up.
Well, speaking of making sense of your history, could you speak a bit about the effects of the Rethinking Poles and Jews book? I think, I looked at the book again this morning, that it offers clarification. Sometimes the issues become so complex that the insert of the essays that helped to simplify matters. I was reading something that Shauna Penn had done, and it helps to narrow the field, so to speak, when you handle these essays. The advantage of using this book in the class and introducing it? Are you pleased with your book?
Yes, I am pleased with the book. I think it has withstood the test of time.
Good.
Because it came out in 2006, so now it has been 6 years since then. And in this field, a lot can happen in 1 year,
six years.
I think all of the essays in there are still, general conclusions are still valid. I still have to thank Robert Cherry, because it was he who had the idea for this book.
Yes.
He's a Jewish American from New York City, and his field is not even Polish-Jewish relations or Polish-Jewish, Polish-Christian relations. He is actually a scholar in dealing mostly with issues of social welfare. He's an economist and
welfare, yes,
etc. But this was a passion of his, that he felt as a Jewish American that there needed to be more looking for the context, that we had to stop looking at some single document as somehow not just indicative, but a lot of people thought it was the end, that one document could be the end all and be all of the entire picture.
Yes.
Of a millennium of Polish Christian, Polish Jewish coexistence on Polish territories, whether it was
at times when Poland was a sovereign country, or when it disappeared and was under three empires between 1795 and 1918, or when it was under the totalitarianisms of World War II, or when it was under Soviet installed governments after the war. And so Robert asked me, because he felt that a Jewish American and a Polish American needed to do this together, a Polish Christian American. And then that was also our goal in who would we invite to write. Mm-hmm. So we do have a Roman Catholic priest who is Polish American, Jan Bukowski. We do have Jewish American scholars. We do have Polish Jews. We do have Polish Catholics in here. We also have in each of the sections. It isn't like one of the sections is just Polish Catholics, and another section is Polish Jews, and another section is Jewish American. In each of the sections, there are people from each of the perspectives. Mm-hmm. And we made use of people who were scholars and people who are non-scholars, people who are journalists and people who are theologists, people who are living in Poland and people who have
a good cross-section.
Yes, from Shayna Penn's article. And Robert gave me free rein on making decisions who would be in the last section. He accepted all of my choices there. The last section is supposed to be how it looks in Poland and more than one Polish perspective. But apart from her, I would really recommend the essay by Carolyn Slutsky.
Yes, fine.
And she thought as a 16-year-old very critically of what she was hearing in Washington, just one intense week of death camp upon death camp. And so she took it upon herself as a young JTA, Jewish Telegraph Agency journalist, mm-hmm. to come back and live here,
yes.
and really understand Poland from within. She really invested a lot of time and energy to get the picture from inside mm-hmm. Poland and confront what she had grown up with, coming from Philadelphia, then later on living in New York, which is where she lives now, to confront all of the pictures that she had had from the United States, that she had from that one death week mm-hmm. During the March of Living, and what she had from living here for 2 years and since then visiting.
Personal stories.
Just if I can add one. Just this semester, this last year, I had a student who was born in Poland in the late 1980s. Yeah. Late 1980s, I think 88, 89. And when she was a child, at the beginning of Poland's democracy, the family moved to Germany, to West Germany. Right? It was already after the unification, but we still have to know where is somebody living in Germany today. And she lives very much in the western part. She decided to come to Poland this year to do an academic year abroad at our university and to try to deal with her Polish-Germanness. And she chose to do almost all of the classes that I taught, but she chose also the Holocaust class, which you can imagine is doubly hard for someone who is Polish and German.
Yes.
And she asked me to embed her in the March of the Living, so I put her in the International Adults Group. She was with them for 4 solid days. She met with different Jewish groups, including Israeli officers who came to visit Poland. And it was also a personal journey for her. And her final research paper for the Holocaust class this last semester was sort of an anthropological, introspective analysis of the evolution of her coming to terms with being both German and Polish, and what does German history and Polish history have to do with each other, and what they have to do with the Holocaust and the Jewish perspective. So these are the success stories that Carolyn's and Valerie's has that make me want to keep doing this.
Well, do you foresee another book with inclusion of
Yes.
Material like this, since it
works
so well.
Yeah, it probably like we should start working and have a book come out in another 5 years or update this book.
Yes.
Robert and I might do that. By the way, it was translated into Polish and did come out here as well. So this is very important that the Polish audience also had a chance to get into this. But what is really interesting for me is that I very often get invited to write a chapter for some book, and sometimes it's completely different things. Like, there was a book that came out, The Politics of Memory in Postwar Europe, and the editors found out about me and asked me to write a chapter on postwar collective memory in Poland. But one of the things that they wanted was, what is the postwar collective memory of the Shoah, right? Not just of Poland, but also the Shoah in Poland. I've also contributed chapters to a book on representing the Shoah for the 21st century, the results of a conference in Dublin in 2001.
Oh, that's wonderful.
In my articles, because I'm an anthropologist, I say that the document, the historical fact, we can't just say something is some document, a peace treaty was signed on X day in Y place, and that solved the problem. It did not, because no war ends on the day that the peace treaty is signed. Right? And we saw that very clearly in recent times with the Dayton Accords regarding the former Yugoslavia and the continuation of wars after that. Right? So, as an anthropologist, for me, it is very important that my students, but also that readers of any articles I write, see the big picture, so they see the embeddedness.
I'm curious, since you have the opportunity to be one-on-one with students, how you work with students during the annual Jewish Cultural Festival.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not asking for you to criticize, but just some comment. I believe it's in its 22nd year.
Yes.
If I were to ask you what you saw to be the advantages of having the festival, and what the disadvantages are, would that be appropriate? I don't want to put you on the spot.
Disadvantages.
I mean, do you see it as something highly academic, or is it a festival?
We are in luck because in 2010 I received a grant from the Ministry of Higher Education in Poland to study the festival.
Oh, I have asked the right person.
Absolutely. We already have in our database questionnaires, over 2,000 questionnaires collected from the last two festivals. Knowing that the festival program, on the one hand, it has a certain framework, a certain screenplay that it is trying to replicate, but within that framework, there are changes in the program every year. And there's always completely new people to the festival. So because of that, I told the ministry that I wanted to study it for 3 years in a row. This is the third and last year.
Okay.
So on Friday, I'm going to be with my team of students. I met with this year's team of students. I met with them last night to talk about how we are going to tackle this year, because every year I have different students volunteering to do this. I will have to tell you that among them, because the students who are Institute of Sociology students, they will get credit for this, as of course. A student who is an exchange student from Germany, he is actually originally from Russia, so he's fluent in Russian, German, and English, and he begged to be allowed onto our team, And yesterday, two young people who heard about our research drove in from Katowice, which is a little over an hour away, to come to the meeting, and they also want to help in this collecting of data and analysis of data.
May I ask what kind of things you are looking at?
Well, we also, because I'm an anthropologist, so I won't be ever happy with just a narrow picture. So, several things that we decided from the get-go that we would do. One is, and the main thrust, what everybody always wants, is the statistics, right? Mm-hmm. We'll never know how many people actually come to the festival because there's no way to actually count exactly how many people come because it takes place over a span of about 9 days and 10 days. And as a result, and some people are there for 1 day and some are there for the whole 9 days. So that said, we wanted to know who's coming, what are their reasons for coming, what is their ethnic or religious background, are they people who are all anti-Semitic, or do some of them perhaps hold some anti-Semitic stereotypes? How do they feel about Jews? What are their images of Jews, and how do they see the Jew in the festival? Do they see a difference in the way that the festival represents Jewishness and the way the historically engraved stereotypes show them? So, we have a four-page questionnaire, tightly filled with two-thirds of the audience is Polish Roman Catholic. And they come because they want to come to the festival. Their reason for coming is because they want to come to the festival. But a very close number two reason why they come to the festival, and this is also the number one reason for the foreigners who come to the festival, is I'm interested in Jewish culture. And this is really very interesting, that they are coming not completely by accident, but because they decide that they want to come to this festival, and they want to come because they are interested in Jewish culture.
Very good.
Another thing that we found is there are Polish Roman Catholics who still have what we would qualify from various definitions of anti-Semitism. We won't go into all of that, but from what most social scientists, when they study anti-Semitism or racism, etc., we would say that some of the festival audience who are Polish Roman Catholics, that among this group, there are some people who hold some views we would consider anti-Semitic. None of them score like perfectly anti-Semitic, but some of them hold some of the stereotypes. And this is also very interesting for us because this shows that the holding of a stereotype does not perfectly correlate with action. That just because I think Jews do have a lot of influence on the media, that's one of the negative stereotypes about Jews, does not mean that I don't want to listen to a rabbi talking about Judaism, that I don't want to attend music concerts, that I don't want to send my children to a workshop on Judaism for children, that I don't want to see a 1936 film that was made in Yiddish filmed here in Poland, that I don't want to invest time and energy to move my family to Krakow for a vacation that's going to be spending the morning till night touring the Kazimierz district and also the Pogórze ghetto and going to the cemeteries and looking at the symbolry of the gravestones there. This is an investment of time and energy, and it is really amazing that it's mostly Polish Roman Catholics who are doing this.
Yes. Oh, and the results will benefit not just social anthropologists, but also the founders, the
yes, the
festival people
have been asking us since, because of course as soon as I knew that I got the grant, I went to Janusz Marku and I told him
yes.
that I would be putting him under the microscope as we've known each other for decades now.
Well, culturally, it's so interesting.
Yeah, but I told him that, you know, that we would be doing this and the festival has been because over the years people have been asking them for different data and now we can give it to them.
Yes.
But apart from that, we tell our team of students, one, to do participant observation, to sit in on lectures and notice what are people talking about,
mm-hmm.
to make notes, to write down their observations. Some of our students will be at the festival for the first time. They have fresh eyes. We're also doing visual sociology. We hand out about 20 cameras, single-use cameras. Look at the photographs. We tell people to take a photograph. What do you see when you look at the festival? And so we'll be analyzing, coding the photographs.
This sounds like a marvelous project.
We're doing interviews with some of the artists. Some of the artists who only come twice to the festival or once to the festival, and some artists who come in year in and year out.
Oh, I think this will be fascinating. This will be the next project.
Oh,
I could ask you many other questions, but would you feel that it's safe to believe that Krakow still holds a great historical fascination and a destination that certainly would be exciting for the next generation and the next generation after that? And I'm speaking personally because I have two grandchildren who are
attending my classes.
Yes, yes. And I appreciate all the candid comments and the perspective that you have as a professor, because we all know with the changes in the internet that it's a challenging time that we live in.
Yes.
And I'm delighted to hear about this particular study, because I see that the information we'll be gathering will be used in the most interesting way. Mm-hmm. So I will end and thank you very, very much. Thank you for spending the time.
Thank you for inviting me here in Poland.
Goodbye for now.